Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the world view. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help you to focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have everyone here again. It's been quite an enjoyable week. I've had a wonderful time here in paradise. And I hope you have too. I'm just looking at my show notes. I've got a list of roofers and then notes about the news. And I did find a roofer, yes, found a good quality roofer for the ongoing saga that continues to this very moment and will continue again tomorrow. And we're happy about it. We're happy and positive. We're going to take an upbeat approach, and we're going to keep our chins up, and we're going to keep on going until we finish. Cleaning up after the hippies, which it's going well. It still has a smell, but it's a better smell. It's an interesting smell, and it's getting better every day. I tell you what, the smell of dirty hippies is really hard to get out of, even solid wood. It's amazing. But things are going okay. Things are going well here at the McBurney compound. And I suppose, should we get right to the news? Should I make my prediction about Trump right off the top of the show? I think I'll wait until do I have any political news? I have been continuing to watch the ongoing collapse of the Hillary Clinton campaign, much to my pleasure. I don't think I have any political news. Oh, yeah, I do. So I'll wait. I'll wait on my dramatic Trump prediction until a little bit later in the broadcast. I'll just tease it up here at the beginning, see, and then I know you'll continue to listen because you've got to hear my prediction about Donald Trump. But otherwise, I don't think we mention him at all this week. But we'll fit him in. But let's start with the Burning Man Festival. If you're not familiar, the Burning Man Festival is where a bunch of neo-hippie types, the lip ring people, the ear grommets, the gauges, the neck tattoos, the tramp stamps. It's where they all get together and exchange various venereal diseases and listen to music and take a lot of drugs. And they do it out in the desert, the Black Rock Desert in Nevada. For whatever reason, I always notice when the Burning Man is going on. I think it's because Matt Drudge puts it up every time. He puts up something about it. No doubt he's attended it at least once. I was invited once in the 90s, and I said, I don't think so. No. It's in the Black Rock Desert in Nevada, and this year, the Burning Man Festival has been inundated with biting bugs. Yeah, a bunch of the Burning Man kids and Neo kids and older kids and kids who should have grown up a long time ago and cut off their stupid ponytails and let their earlobes heal and grow up and get a life. Well, now they're being infested with bugs and they're uploading various stories on Twitter, horror stories. There's a blog post on the page, the webpage for Voices of the Burning Man Festival, and a blogger wrote, "You may have seen the bug rumors on the internet. Well, I'm here to tell you that they're all true. The bugs are real. They're everywhere. They bite. They crawl all over you. They get up and in you," he said, this blogger, about the bugs out at the Burning Man Festival. Well, I would think that if any self-respecting bug got a taste of a few Burning Man attendees, that they'd head the other way. So it's likely that the bugs will leave on their own after tasting the filthy hippies, neo-hippies, and 50-year-old cruisers with ponytails. No need to send any kind of pest control. It'll all happen naturally without any pesticides. The bugs will go away. All right, but that's not really serious. Although I suppose if you're out there and you're getting eaten by bugs, then that's serious. And also, you're destroying your mind and your soul and your everything. I guess it's somewhat serious, but not as serious as the three Americans who were on a train over in, where was it, in France? Three Americans, this is according to the Independent over in London, and the Burning Man story came from the Daily Mail. Apparently Britain's still the only place with actual reporters anymore. But three Americans have prevented a gunman from opening fire on a passenger train from Amsterdam to northern France. Yes, one was a soldier, Alex Scarlatos. Another was an airman, Spencer Stone. And another was a college student, an American, Anthony Sadler. And now this is this should go in the These Guys Are Heroes file, because they actually did something heroic. This terrorist emerged from the bathroom shirtless with an AK-47 and a pistol. And while everyone else in the train ran the other way, no doubt French citizens, they all ran the other way. The three Americans ran at the guy. Let's see, one of them, Mr. Scarlatos, he says, "I grabbed his AK, which was at his feet, and I started muzzle thumping him in the head with it. And then all three of the Americans beat the man until he was unconscious. And then they were assisted by a British national in tying him up." And I when I read the story, my only question was, how is it they didn't kill this guy? How do you not kill a guy who emerges from the bathroom shirtless with an AK-47 and a pistol, obviously with a desire to meet Allah and get his 72 virgins? I just don't know how they didn't kill this guy, but they beat him unconscious, and that's pretty good. These are actual heroes. And so once again, France owes America a debt in preventing the death and injury of countless French citizens at the hands of maniacal Islamists. So yes, you're welcome, Francois. You're welcome, Pierre. And by the way, when the story first went up, the first headline I saw was that three U.S. Marines had stopped this terrorist. But this is a fine example of who these terrorists really are. It doesn't take three Marines to stop these guys. You got an airman, a National Guardsman, and a college student. All it takes is real men. That's all it takes. You don't even need Marines to stop these guys. These guys are crude, third world, uneducated terrorists. And the average college student is probably capable of defeating the average ISIS fighter if he just puts his mind to it. And we give a salute to our brethren there on the train who stopped the terrorists. That's no doubt the best news of the week, right? Definitely the best news of the week. And so it's all downhill from here, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to, I believe it's New York City, where the New York Post is reporting that the granddaughter of actor Morgan Freeman was stabbed to death on a Manhattan sidewalk last week during what law enforcement sources and witnesses are describing as some sort of exorcism at the hands of her ranting boyfriend. At 3 a.m., the boyfriend stabbed Morgan Freeman's granddaughter. Let's see, her name, 33 years old she was, Adina Hines. The boyfriend leapt on her, stabbed her 16 times. And, wow. Hines' grandmother was Morgan Freeman's first wife. Well, it turns out that this is another murder that can be directly related to sexual immorality, because her live-in boyfriend, Lamar Davenport, was in the throes of a drug-induced psychosis when he came after her, according to the police. He shouted things about God and Jesus as he stabbed her to death in front of God and everybody on the sidewalk in Manhattan. The live-in boyfriend, he allegedly was some sort of actor and rapper and called himself Lyric and was well known to abuse cocaine, marijuana, and alcohol. And for good measure, he has two young children. But the girl he killed was not their mother. That's a tangled web to try to figure that. He has 6 prior arrests and probably should have been put to death already. I would say by like the 3rd time. I know, I'm a little bit liberal on that because people get arrested for all kinds of things. So after the 3rd arrest and conviction, he probably should have been put to death, and then this would not have ended up in the Worldview's domestic tranquility file. Domestic tranquility, by the way, on the streets of New York City is, it's not to be found, apparently. I had a story about Times Square, but I couldn't do it because it was just too disgusting. The things that are happening in Times Square now that the communist de Blasio has taken over, it's just sad to see that New Yorkers can no longer travel safely in the streets like they could the last time I was there, which was, well, that was a while back. Anyway, so we've got Morgan Freeman's granddaughter just butchered in the streets of Manhattan. And you ask yourself, now these were young people. Let's see, Hines, does it have 33-year-old Hines? Her boyfriend was probably in the similar. These are young people. What's going on with young people? People, I know, the common phrase is, well, you know, the adults have been saying that forever. What's going on with these young people? But that's not true. I don't think it was true 100 years ago, or at least 150 years ago. But it's been true for, 4 or 5 generations now. There's been the generation gap that was introduced by marketers and lawyers and hucksters and child molesters who run the school system. And so now there's definitely a gap between the younger generation and, me anyway. I've got a story from the IB Times, International Business Times, another British-based operation, as a matter of fact. According to a survey, almost 50% of 18 to 24-year-olds in Britain define themselves as something other than completely heterosexual. Now, just the fact that you can define yourself that way means that there's a gap between you and I. That's all. Something other than completely heterosexual, they say. Yeah, one of the most striking findings, according to the International Business Times, of the new study, is that with each generation, people see their sexuality as less fixed and more fluid. Ew. I don't like the way that came out. Anyway, public opinion seems to accept the concept that sexual orientation exists along a continuum, rather than being an either-or choice. Only 28% of heterosexuals believe there's no middle ground, that you're either a hetero or you're not. So that's the approximately 30% of normal people that are left on the planet. There's 30% of the population is just stone, godless, liberal heathens, hell-bound, self-indulgent, self-absorbed narcissists. That's 30% of the population. They have no idea what's going on. They're only concerned about themselves all the time. And then you've got 30% of the population, another third about, that are actually passionate about the culture and the next generation and right and wrong and truth and justice and the American way and all that good stuff. And then there the other 30%, well, I don't know what's up with them. They kind of move in and out of each group. But there's always a reliable 30% who are completely crazy and a reliable 30% who are at least trying to do the right thing. And so, anyway, there's half the young people say, anyway, that doesn't bode well for the future of Western civilization, but there it is. It's out there. Yeah. And on the heels of that story, we've got USA Today reporting that transgendered people face an alarmingly high risk of suicide. Now, this is something I've been saying since I started this show in, on and off, I've been doing this thing since 1999. And I've always said that homosexuals and specifically transgendered people are obviously mentally ill. So it shouldn't surprise anyone that suicide attempts, according to this USA Today story, are alarmingly common among transgender individuals. 41% of trannies try to kill themselves at some point in their lives. That's compared with about 5% of the general public. Experts say discrimination remains a big problem in the healthcare world, and inadequate mental health care. Inadequate mental health care. Are you implying? Is the USA Today reporter implying that perhaps trannies are mentally ill? I mean, you don't want the trannies to read this. You get this in front of the homos and they're going to say, inadequate mental health care? What are you saying? This means war. Difficult to interrupt Stevie Ray, because you could just let that roll for three more minutes and it goes something like that, but with more notes. It gets faster. It's just Stevie Ray Vaughan on the guitar. Thank you very much, Stevie Ray. You can put that guitar away. And we're back. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm joined in studio by my extremely attractive audio engineer. So glad to have her here. You should have seen her top out that block wall. Tell you what, concrete was flying. Mortar. We had the concrete hair last night. We came home, and if you've ever done concrete and mortar, you know that there's the dust and the powder and the dripping and the flopping and the splattering. And so you end up with this, your hair has a certain coarse, well, it's kind of hard to describe. You almost have to live through it to understand the permeating nature of concrete and mortar. But we got it all washed off and a hippie smell and all the hippie germs. And that block wall, I'll tell you what, that block wall ain't going nowhere. I'll tell you that. That's going to hold. Anyway, let's get back to the news, because you don't want to hear about my pathetic existence as we clean up after hippies. That's nothing you want to hear about. So we'll move to the Lawyer of the Year Award, which will be awarded by the Weekly Worldview to an East Texas judge. Yes, indeed. Let's see if we have his name here. Judge Randall Rogers, Smith County, Texas. Court at law judge Randall Rogers receives the Lawyer of the Year Award from the Weekly Worldview in honor of his, I'll just tell you what he did. He gave a man who pleaded guilty to assault a choice of going to jail or getting married. And he also ordered him to write Bible verses. Now, the Freedom From Religion Foundation was quick to file a complaint seeking to disbar Smith County Court at Law Judge Randall Rogers. Well, the judge last month, see what happened was Justin Bundy, he's a 21-year-old punk. He was shacking up with his girlfriend, you see. And he got into a fight with his shack-up girlfriend's former boyfriend. Former? Well, allegedly former boyfriend. And, so he was gonna get sentenced to 15 days in jail for assaulting the alleged ex-boyfriend of the girl he happened to be shacking up with, one Elizabeth James, 19 years old. But instead of sentencing this young punk to 15 days in jail, the judge gave him the choice to get married And well, him and the girl, they decided to get married. And they say that they're very happy now, but they're annoyed. What do they say? They say, we had talked about eventually getting married, but we did not have any immediate wedding plans, you see. But they say, we're happy we tied the knot, but we did not appreciate being forced into it by the judge, is what they told a TV station down there in East Texas among the pine trees there. And who knows, this judge may have changed this couple's life, at least for a little while. And so there you go. That's our Lawyer of the Year Award, East Texas Judge Randall Rogers. You don't want to go to jail, son. Get married. See, I was in a similar situation, except I wasn't shacking up with anyone. And I hadn't beat up anybody's boyfriend. But I was in high school, and I found myself, unfortunately, in the Upton County Jail in Rankin, Texas, out in West Texas, when I was just a young lad, 18 years old. And I was supposed to go into the service in September, and I had it all worked out. I had a plan. I was going to graduate high school out of spite. By the way, I graduated high school out of spite because I had been asked to leave my home, the home of my beloved mother and father. My father had asked me to leave, appropriately, by the way. He had basically kicked me out of the house with a couple of months left in my senior year, and I had a wonderful plan. I was going to just finish high school just to spite my father, and then I was going to just live it up until it was time to go back to school, and then I was going to go off to boot camp. But I found myself, unfortunately, the living it up part didn't go as I'd planned. I'm in the Upton County Jail. It's like day three. And the jailer comes and he says, your recruiter says that your daddy has arranged for you to get on a plane tomorrow and go off to boot camp if you want to get out of here. And I said, well, I'll take it. I'll do anything to get out of here. This is horrible. I'm in jail. It's awful. And so my daddy came and got me out of the Upton County Jail, and we had a heart-to-heart talk. And then I got on an airplane, and I flew out to MCRD, San Diego, California. And the one thing I remember was that night when I went to bed on my newly issued rack in the barracks at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego, California. I remember thinking, man, I wish I was in the Upton County Jail. I hadn't made the shade in the Upton County Jail. I appreciate people being creative with justice. When the justice system is so insane, it takes some creativity to try to turn some people around. And, I hope this young couple lives happily ever after. I hope they have a number of children. And I hope at their 20th wedding anniversary, they invite Judge Randall Rogers to celebrate his award of the Lawyer of the Year from the Weekly Worldview that he received for his stunning judicial creativity. All right, now, I have a comment here from Bob, the tri-state conservative. He may be the only conservative left in the tri-state area, although I think he has some friends. So Bob's probably not the only conservative left in the tri-state area, but he's among a small and dwindling group, and he keeps in touch regularly with the Weekly Worldview, especially when reporters and religious leaders, political leaders, cultural icons, when they do things that are stupid. Bob is always quick to point it out. And this week, Bob is commenting on Chris Cuomo. This is from our personhood file, by the way. Are you familiar with Chris Cuomo? I'm sure you're not, because he's on CNN. So, not too many people are familiar with Chris Cuomo. But you may know his dad was Mario Cuomo, mafia member and former governor of the state of New York. Or was it mayor? I forget. I only know the mafia thing for sure. I'm not sure what office he held. But he had a couple of rotten, horrible children that he raised to be lawyers. And one of them now is currently either the governor of New York or the mayor. Well, he's not the mayor. The mayor's that communist de Blasio. The other brother is the governor of New York State, while Chris Cuomo is barely holding down a job at CNN by the skin of his teeth, And Bob reports that Doug, Chris Cuomo's hatred for Jesus Christ has rendered him incapable of logical thought. And he quotes Chris Cuomo. He says, remember, Doug, this is the guy who scolded Chief Judge Roy Moore earlier this year for maintaining that our rights come from God and not from men. You folks remember that? I think I covered that here when Cuomo said to Roy Moore said our rights come from God. And Chris Cuomo, just a perfect example of how secularism has removed one generation from the other. Because while Mario Cuomo, he may have been in the mafia, he may have been a liberal, he may have been a socialist, but he still would have at least given lip service to the idea that our rights come from God, like it says in the Declaration of Independence. He would have at least given that lip service. But no, not anymore. The next generation, the next generation of Cuomos, they have no idea. They don't believe in God. They don't think there's a God. So to think that our rights come from God is ludicrous to these guys. So Chris said to Judge Roy Moore, quote, our rights do not come from our rights do not come from God, and you know it, Cuomo said. They come from man. Our laws come from the collective agreement and compromise. And that's what he truly believes. And if you believe that, you're as stupid as Chris Cuomo. Well, Chris Cuomo has said this time, let's see, I think he was talking to Marco Rubio. Anybody heard of Marco Rubio? Yeah, me neither. But anyway, Chris Cuomo was talking to Marco Rubio about when does a human being become a human person? And Cuomo said, well, it's not definitive science. I can have scientists on this show all morning from all walks of life who will all say we cannot say it's definitely human life at conception. And he said that with a straight face, as if any scientist would say it's not human. Now, what Cuomo means is he doesn't think it's a person. And he could find a lot of scientists to come on and say it's not a person. That's because most of them have participated in the abortion Holocaust. Scientists, lawyers, dishwashers, plumbers, welders, pastors, preachers' kids. Yeah. I mean, at least a third of the population has participated. And not just that third I was talking about earlier, that stone cold hell bound. No. 30% of people you know and talk to all the time, they've actually participated in it. So in the madness that comes from denying the truth regularly over and over, Mario Cuomo has arrived at a position of, well, as Bob said, he's incapable of logical thought, because to assert that an unborn child, even a newly formed blastocyst or embryo or fetus, to say it's not human, well, it's simply irrational. And to say it's not a person, well, leads me to believe, along with Bob, the tri-state conservative, that you have been rendered incapable of logical thought. And Mr. Cuomo, he should be drummed off of even CNN. Please. All right. Now, speaking of life in the womb, let's go deeper into the personhood file, because another video has come out. And, of course, each one of these videos released by the Center for Medical Progress is worse than the last. In the latest one, Dr. Teresa Deesher, a scientist in the field of adult stem cell therapies and regenerative medicine, discussed what was involved in harvesting the organs of aborted babies. And I don't want to go into detail, but according to this scientist, in order for organs of babies to be viable for research, the baby must be kept alive with a beating heart in order to get the baby through the harvesting of its organs. See, they want the best top quality organs they can get, and the best organs have had blood pumping through them recently. Some babies, according to Teresa Deesher, are alive right up until the moment their hearts are cut out, harvested in Nazi-esque fashion by the abortionists at Planned Parenthood, and then brokered to so-called scientists for Frankensteinian scientific research, cutting out their hearts while they're still beating. There's 7 videos now, 8 videos. They say there's 4 more. Can it get any worse than this? Can it get any worse than hearing them talk about cutting the baby's hearts out while the baby's still alive, while the heart is still beating? If this doesn't change it, if this doesn't change something dramatically, I will have to ask, has America collectively had its heart cut out? Get there, you will be able to attend the Planned Parenthood Annual Media Awards Ceremony. Yes, that will be one of the highlights down there in hell, because only in hell would a journalist accept an award from an organization that has recently been exposed for butchering and harvesting and selling innocent children. But it happened, not in hell. But I think it was in New York City, as a matter of fact. Let's see. Planned Parenthood's Maggie Awards for Media Excellence were held this past week. And journalists were recognized. Journalists from BuzzFeed, Yahoo, MSNBC, Cosmopolitan, The Nation, Salon, Teen Vogue. Yes. They were honored for advancing the butchery and murder, wholesale slaughter of a generation of children. And they took their awards in public in front of God and everyone. Yeah. By the way, the Maggie Awards, they are named in honor of the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, whose infamous Negro Project was organized in order to sterilize black people back when that was in fashion, you see. Now, that's no longer in fashion, but Maggie still gets her name on an award, and journalists still publicly accept the award, despite the fact that Planned Parenthood has been exposed once again as one of the most brutally vicious, evil, wicked, corrupt, vile, disgusting, and damnable organizations in the history of our nation, nay, in the history of the world. Planned Parenthood has organized and participated in the greatest crime in all of human history. Never before has anything like this ever happened. The global Holocaust has now claimed the lives of approaching 700 million innocent people. Planned Parenthood and Margaret Sanger and these journalists and Republican and Democrat politicians who fund it, They have participated in more murders than every war, every pestilence, every plague, every atrocity in human history combined. Approaching 700 million lives worldwide. And they take their awards in public, by the way. They take their awards in public. All right. Let's talk a little bit about Margaret Sanger, because a group of black pastors has organized themselves and asked the Smithsonian Institution to remove a bust of the aforementioned Maggie Sanger, author of the Negro Project, designed to eliminate the undesirable races, among which, she said, were the Negroes. Well, a group of black pastors has gotten together. The National Portrait Gallery at the Smithsonian Institution this week has officially refused the request from a group of black pastors who asked that they remove a bust of eugenicist Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger. This is from CNSnews.com. You see, her bust sits in the Smithsonian's Struggle for Justice exhibit. Well, so now the Smithsonian Institution, they conceded that Sanger was indeed a eugenicist. And they declared that, we at the Smithsonian impose no moral test when we honor Americans by placing their images in the National Portrait Gallery. So I think that they're working on a new exhibit on domestic violence, and they're going to have a bust of O.J. Simpson, because they don't make any moral. And of course, the anti-Semitism that down the hall, that will have a bust of Joseph Mengele. Yeah. There's no moral test, you see. So CNS, they report that that Smithsonian actually had the nerve to say that Margaret Sanger was a figure of controversy, one whose complexities and contradictions mirror her times. That's according to National Portrait Gallery director Kim Sagitt. And Kim, he, she, it, whatever it is, said that there is no moral test for people to be accepted into the National Portrait Gallery. We'll take just about anyone. In response, the black ministers, part of an organization called Ministers Taking a Stand, well, they've pledged to continue to fight for the bust's removal. And they said Sanger should be displayed in an exhibit appropriate for supporters of genocide such as Hitler, Stalin, Mao, and Mengele. So for those of you who may not be familiar with Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, and by the way, when I was a young kid, 9, 10 years old, I remember seeing Planned Parenthood commercials on television. This was in the 70s. And I remember thinking, wow, Planned Parenthood, that's a great idea. You should plan for that type of thing. I had no idea. And maybe you have no idea because you have a life and you work and, well, you have relationships. You don't pay attention to all this stuff all the time. So let me let you know a little bit about Margaret Sanger and why the Smithsonian says she's included in the exhibit. They say she's included because, as the founder of the American Birth Control League, she strived to bring medical advice and affordable birth control to disadvantaged women at a time when even providing literature on women's health infringed on obscenity laws. Sagitt, the director, says Sanger wanted to give couples the ability to control the size of their families. So that's why she's being honored. Well, they did acknowledge that she was a eugenicist. And eugenics, by the way, is a Darwinian-based idea that society can be improved through birth control, sterilization, and selective breeding to maximize the growth of superior races and minimize the growth of inferior races. Maggie's notorious Negro Project, which sought to limit, if not eliminate, black births, was her brainchild, the pastors point out in their letter. And despite these well-documented facts of history, her bust sits proudly In the Smithsonian Gallery as a hero of justice, the obvious incongruity is staggering. And they are vowing to continue this fight. And I'll do all I can. I remember 15 years ago when this all came out about Planned Parenthood selling baby parts. I remembered. I reported on it. I was active. There were protests. I went. We shouted. We carried our signs, and nothing changed. I think the machine has simply become more efficient now. And I know there have been protests this past Saturday. I believe in over 200 cities, Christians got together at the Planned Parenthood abortion mills. Again with the signs, again with the preaching and the shouting and the yelling and the screaming and the praying and the weeping. And I chose not to go. I did that. I did that 15 years ago. And it's not that I respect the people who go, and I think that anyone who has teenage kids should take them and show them the horrifying truth. So it's a good thing to go if it's something you've never done. Go and see the truth of what's happening. You'll see pictures. You'll talk to people. It's a worthwhile experience to go to your local Planned Parenthood on any given day when they're killing children. But I chose not to go because, well, here's my thing. When an American governing official, a sheriff, or a governor, on the day that he's willing to cross onto Planned Parenthood's property with a weapon and a padlock in order to shut Planned Parenthood down, that day, that's the day I will go. And I hope you'll all join me, and I hope that day comes very soon. I had a lady at church this morning tell me, well, why don't you run for sheriff then? And, well, unfortunately, I think I've in the story I told you earlier about being in the Upton County Jail, I've done some things in my life that preclude me from political office of any sort. Most of it good and righteous. Most of the things I've been in jail for that would keep me from becoming a politician are good and righteous things. So, hey, if America gets to the place where they would elect Doug McBurney as a sheriff, well, we probably wouldn't even be talking about having to shut down Planned Parenthood. But we're not there yet. And evidence of that is the fact that the Ashley Madison website continues to exist, although I do have a prediction that in short order, Ashley Madison will no longer exist. And I'll be thankful. But meanwhile, the owners over there at the Ashley Madison website, they are quite upset. They're questioning the veracity of the data that's been released. And as well they might, apparently, according to the Associated Press, hundreds of U.S. government employees, including some with sensitive jobs in the White House, used internet connections at their federal offices to access the Ashley Madison website. That's right. Hundreds? I'm actually shocked. I would have thought that there would be thousands or even tens of thousands of people who work for the government on Ashley Madison. So I'm actually encouraged that it's hundreds. But now everybody wants to know who it is. Well, they say, the AP says, that they've looked into the data, and it includes at least two assistant U.S. attorneys and someone with administrator access in the executive office of the president. The executive office of the president himself. Yes, I know. The first thing I thought, could it be, finally, Michelle has had enough and Barry Ho's M.O. was on Ashley Madison? We'll be right back. That's right. You know, we all heard those stories about Barry at the bathhouse back in the 90s when he was a state senator. We all heard the stories. I don't know if it's true, but I can assure you that Michelle knows. The executive office. Let's see there. By the way, Ashley Madison's slogan was, "Life's short, have an affair." That was their slogan. Now, the fact that that could be published legally is an indication that America's just gone straight to hell in a handbasket. The fact that you could say that publicly and legally and then profit from it is quite disturbing. But it's also very, very misleading because life is not short for all the heathens and the sex perverts at Ashley Madison. Life is not short. Life is eternal. And what you do in this life is going to affect the destiny of your eternal soul. And so their slogan is not only criminal, it's a lie. And their doors should be kicked down. They should all be arrested. And, they should be shut down. And I'll leave it at that. All right, I'll just leave it at that. By the way, the owners at Ashley Madison say that they don't know that the data that's been leaked is actually valid. Well, that's because they're just about done. Yeah, they say they're going to continue to put forth substantial efforts into removing any information unlawfully released to the public, as well as continuing to operate our business. Well, guess what? No, you're not. You're done. Get out of here. You're finished. And couldn't have happened to a nicer bunch. Perverts. Destroying the country is what they're doing. I mean, you people have no idea. I'm sure you do have some idea. But the destruction of a family and the destruction of a child's innocence it should be a capital crime, frankly. And someday when Doug McBurney is sheriff, it will be a capital crime to facilitate or publicly advocate adultery. Forget homosexuality. We're not even going to bring that up. You're not even going to be able to talk about that. You're not going to want to talk about that. That's so disgusting and so beyond the pale that when I'm the sheriff, by golly, that won't even come up as a topic for discussion. That's only something they'll talk about in San Francisco and only in that part of San Francisco, by the way. All right. Now, we have a reporter over at the Washington Times who alleges that Barry Obama is torpedoing Hillary Clinton's campaign. Yes. Yes, he says, he or she, since I neglected to get the author's name, I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, but he or she says that the email scandal is being orchestrated, or at least the prosecution, the pending prosecution of Mrs. Clinton is actually being overseen by Mr. Obama. And I'll tell you what, the article makes a pretty good case. The author says that Barry, he needs a successor he can control. If Mr. Obama does not want an investigation to go forward, we all know it does not go forward. We all remember the Internal Revenue scandal, Benghazi, the Veterans Administration, Operation Fast and Furious. If Barry doesn't want to investigate, it does not get investigated. Well, yeah, I mean, we all remember, right? Barry said, well, I'll get to the bottom of this. I won't sleep. I won't rest until I figure out all the... But we all knew he had no intention, right, of investigating, and that's what the author here in the Washington Times points out. But in Mrs. Clinton's case, Barry's been quiet, too quiet. And the author here says that's a tell that he wants this investigation pursued, likely to the point of charging Hillary Clinton with a criminal violation. her top aides, Huma Abedin of the Muslim Sisterhood, Cheryl Mills and Jake Sullivan, are now also in investigator sites, and we all know that any one of them could crack. Because, you know, anyone who's worked for Hillary Clinton for any amount of time, they hate her. They hate her with a vile hatred that knives shoot out of their eyes. That's how much they hate her. And so they can't wait. Well, this author predicts that this email scandal is going to be facilitated at the highest levels. Hillary will be charged, and the Democratic ticket will be Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren. That's what he says. Yes, that's what the author here says. That's what Mr. Obama wants. And what Mr. Obama wants, Mr. Obama gets. And so far in his presidency, that has absolutely been true. What Barry wants, Barry gets. And, well, Barry's, well, he wanted it, and he's getting it. And if he wants Biden and that other communist, Elizabeth Warren, the Indian from Massachusetts, well, that's what he'll get. All right. Now, since I'm talking about politics briefly, I am going to make a prediction about Donald Trump. How much time do we have left? We have very little time left. Donald Trump, he said something in passing the other day on TV. He was asked, why haven't we seen your wife? And I can't remember her name because I knew Ivana, and then I think I knew the second one, and this is like 3 or 4 or 5. I don't remember Donald Trump's wife's name. But he was asked, oh, I remember, by the judge with the Botox face and the one who waxes her legs so that Mr. Ailes can see through her glass desk when they do the close-up. Judge Jeanine, the late night, the cross-eyed one. Yeah, the cross-eyed freak show with the waxed legs. I mean, it actually looks like she takes a buffer and polishes those legs. It's just bizarre. But anyway, she was doing a one-hour love fest with Donald Trump. I think it was last night. She asked him in passing, when are you going to bring out, what's her name? Your wife, whoever. I can't remember her name, I apologize. And Trump didn't say anything for a second. He was obviously a bit caught off guard. And to me, that was a tell. So Trump was caught a bit off guard. But he collected himself and he said, my lovely, beautiful, exceptional wife is a wonderful person. She has a passion for women's health issues. And when she comes to the stage of the campaign, America will see a brilliant and wonderful and beautiful person. That's what Don said, the Donald. So here's my prediction. For all of you Republicans out there, please don't hate me any more than you hate me already. But I predict that Donald Trump's pro-abort stripper trophy wife she's a stripper. She's posed naked in magazines. She would be the first American first lady to have posed in a pornographic magazine. Yes, she did. Anyway, his pro-abort stripper trophy wife is going to cost him the Christian vote. Now, the Romans, I view Donald Trump as a Roman, kind of the same way I view Michael Savage as a Roman. You know, we agree on a lot of political issues, temporal issues, and we disagree on the big spiritual issues. So to me, it's like the Romans against the Christians. Donald Trump and Michael Savage are part of the Romans. And I'm with the Christians over here. And there's not that many of us, and it doesn't look like we could ever win. Right? But somehow we do at the end of the day, if you read to the end of the book. But anyway, all you Romans are going to hate us Christians for it. Just like you did, by the way, for Romney and McCain. We know why Romney and McCain lost, right? Because they were too liberal for the Christians. And so the Christians just stayed home. And what these ignorant Romans have not yet realized is that they need the Christians. And Donald Trump's pro-abort stripper trophy wife will cost him the Christian vote. He will either lose the Republican nomination or he will lose the national election. At which point, the secular conservatives, the so-called fiscal conservatives, and the Republican establishment, and a good swath of the Tea Party, are going to be so incensed with the religious right that there is going to be a calamitous split between the Christians and pretty much everyone else. And I'm very concerned that it's going to be open season on the Christians, at least in a political sense. We're going to end up being, we are one of the most powerful minorities in the electorate, by the way. The Christians control the election. If we decide to stay home, well, you get Barry Ho. We decide to get up and go vote, you get Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. So we control it. And I know that the secularists are going to hate us for it. Yeah, but that's what I see happening. Donald Trump will not be the next president. Because at some point, the Democrats are going to realize that the stripper pro-abort could cost him the election, and they will use her to take him out. All right, so that is my big political prediction of the week. Not that it means a whole lot, but politics being what it is. And yes, we've appreciated having Donald Trump around. If politics is going to be a show, at least make it entertaining, for crying out loud. And one thing you can say about Donald Trump is that he is mildly entertaining. What else do we have here? Oh, finally, ladies and gentlemen, from the dementia file, proving that everyone who does something interesting for the government is not a hero. Let's see here. The sixth man to walk on the moon was Edgar Mitchell. He was, he walked on the moon. Well, he now says that he believes peacekeeping aliens visited our planet to prevent a nuclear war between Russia and the United States. Yes, this is a man who walked on the moon. This is a highly educated scientist, an astronaut, for crying out loud. How old is this guy now? I mean, has anyone checked into the fact that perhaps he's just losing his mind? This is sad, actually. Well, here's what he says. He says, my own experience talking to people has made it clear that the extraterrestrials had been attempting to keep us from going to war and to help create peace on Earth. Yes, he said UFOs actually disabled missiles, and missiles were frequently shot down by alien spacecraft. All right, now this is Edgar Mitchell. I had not heard of this guy, but apparently he walked on the moon and was somebody at some point. Anyway, I think it's just kind of sad now that I actually read through the story. I was going to kind of make fun of the guy, but I think maybe he's just losing it, which is one of the benefits of living into your 80s, is that if your body lasts long enough, eventually you lose your mind. So, anyway, I guess that's all I've got. Aliens. Everybody's into aliens. I think that's it for the show. I have other stories, but I really don't find them interesting, and the music's playing anyways. And I'm thinking tonight I'd just like to listen to the music. So I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. And, of course, my extremely attractive audio engineer, who, should the Lord tarry, will return with me next week to do this all again. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.